Strap in, Arizona homeowners. We're all over the board today. From a very down-to-earth conversation with Director Fleetham of the Registered Contractors, we're going out of this world with Dr. Sky. Welcome to the program, sir.
And good morning, Romy. Good morning, Jennifer. And hey, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody out there.
Yes, sir. What do we have? You're a busy man this time of year, or is it just how the cosmos are lined up right now?
Well, it's kind of a combination of both, Romy. It's just a fascinating time of the year here, and just in the next few days, so much to digest here. So let's begin, of course, with some really phenomenal things that the listeners can actually see. As we mentioned on our Dr. Sky show here on KTAR, we talk in depth, that is, about what you can see and how you can participate. So the first thing I'd like to mention is, as we move into early next week, another of the series of things we call the supermoon. And I guess you guys, did you get to see the one in November? Because I know so many people were just awestruck at that beautiful moon back in November. Did you guys see that?
We did. It was beautiful.
Oh, it's just incredible. And they come in pairs, or they come actually in a group of maybe three or four. So this is the last of the supermoons. What is that? It's a moon, and it's not really an astronomy term. It's actually, technically, it's called a perigee moon, if you want to be precise. But hey, I'll take supermoon. It looks beautiful. So if you look into the sky and to the east, on Tuesday the 13th, the moon rises at exactly 5:35 p.m. So folks, get out those notepads, because here's something really cool. 5:35 p.m., you'll find the moon just rising in an area just to the left of east. So you'll see this particular, on the compass, it's 68 degrees if you take as the circle on the compass. So simply, if you just look into the north-northeast on that night of Tuesday the 13th, you're going to see this majestic moon. And they call it super because it's close enough, almost to the all-time closeness. So about 222,000 miles is how close the moon will be on Tuesday night. Beautiful sight.
So that's how close it'll be. How far is the farthest it gets? And do they call that a mini moon when it's on the...
Yes, exactly. And that's a good term. The mini moon, or the apogee moon, that can go out to about 255 or 258,000 miles. But again, looking at this beautiful moon, wow, what a romantic sight. We did a big event, Romy and Jennifer, up at a group in Scottsdale for the last one in November, and you couldn't have asked for a better night. You know, in this beautiful, lush garden, just on cue, like in Hollywood, you would have the moon rise as we're doing this program to music, and it's just magnificent. But without all the fanfare, it's just great, because so many people out there, I got so many, you know, images sent to me at drsky.com. I mean, with all the high tech out there, it's pretty easy. Even with our little Android or iPhone, we can get some pretty good results.
Now, you say this is the last of the supermoon in this series. When is the next series of supermoons going to come in circle?
Great, Jen. You look like 28 to start over again. They're not as rank, and it's clear that in the world, it's always too simply perigee as opposed to, you know, perigee and apogee. You see them on an edge of maybe every 4 years in a good deal. In 2018, you'll start to see this again. And here's something also as a prelude to this event of the supermoon. Here's something, and just for the listeners, I thought I'd give you this great little Dr. Christmas holiday treat. Monday night, take a look at the moon, and you probably want to get a pair of binoculars. This is early, so around school time. Don't think you're strange. Go out with this. Look into the area where the moon is. And right around 7 p.m., you'll notice to the left edge of the moon, that's the area that's not completely round, it's still in shadow, you'll see a fairly bright star, and you may even see it with your eye. But the binoculars will help, because after 7 p.m., as we move into 8, watch what happens. The moon is actually going to eclipse that star. In astronomy, we call it an occultation. Sounds kind of strange at this early hour of the morning. Occultation. It's an eclipse where the moon will cover a star, and for about an hour, the moon will cover that star, and it will magically pop out the other side in a little over an hour. So again, Monday night, skies are clear. Look, starting around 7 p.m., binoculars help. And this is a cool thing, because you don't get all that many of these occultations, and especially a bright star like that.
Now, looking at your website, I may put you on the spot. I should have asked this ahead of time, but I didn't think of it. You've got several different opticals that are on your website. You'd mentioned binoculars. You've obviously spent a lot of time looking at the stars. So you probably have a couple favorites in optical lenses.
I do.
What about cameras? Do you have any photography? I mean, you've got some great pictures of the moon on here. How does somebody take a picture like that?
Well, that's a great question, and here it is. I mean, some of the manufacturers will get either upset or jealous if I mention one specific company, but Here's the deal here, and I'll keep it family friendly because you're asking me a good question. Right now, if someone out there wanted to get started in photography with the, you know, with the astrophotography, some of your basic DSLRs, whether they be Canons, Nikons, there's a lot of other good brands out there. You want a camera, of course, on a tripod. And you want to have that opportunity where you can open that shutter. And I'll keep it simple because not everybody has the technology, you know, fever this early in the morning. You want a camera that will keep zoomed into an area. You don't necessarily have to have a high-powered telephoto lens like a telescope. Even the basic 50-millimeter lens that comes on a lot of these Nikon and Canon cameras, you want to set that exposure, in many cases, in a deep, dark sky that you can leave that shutter open for a while. And what's so cool about this, and I'm old enough to remember, and maybe many of the listeners, of course they are too, if you took film, you know, if you used film in your cameras, you ran to that little place in the middle of the shopping mall that had the tiniest of little buildings called Photomat. And you had to wait to get the pictures developed. Not anymore. It's all digital. So if you make a mistake, you can just write over the next one. I mean, write over the one that you shot. So the simple answer on this is some of the cameras that are out there, they're pretty inexpensive. And even some of the palm-sized cameras are pretty good, as long as you have the ability to open the shutter for a period of time. And I've even got these little cameras that cost less than $100, even $50. And they take some good pictures of the sky with a 30 or 60-second time exposure. They're not going to zoom in, Romy, but, you know, that you brought up a good point. I should be doing these Dr. Sky seminars on how to take pictures, and you, I owe it to you guys if we start doing that in 2017. Why not teach people how to do this? That's cool.
You just schedule that for a non-Saturday, and I'll be the first one to sign up.
Love it. I love you, brother. Now, that's awesome. That's a good thing because some people are shy. You know, they're very nervous when they get a telescope, and here's what happens real quick. A lot of times during the holidays, the children want a telescope, or even the parent does. And what happens, Romy, it's like one of the most exciting gifts under the tree or however you celebrate your holiday. And then within a month or two, the thing is in the closet. And I say the best place to find telescopes is actually the Goodwill. And I mean it sincerely because I've gone there so many times. What happens around March or April, if somebody doesn't know how to use it, it winds up in the Goodwill. And you get the smokiest, best deal in the world. So there again, no, seriously, our plans in 2017 are to teach these seminars so you can be a qualified Dr. Sky observer. And it's the old parable, right? Going like back to the Bible, if I feed you a fish, if I'm catching them along the river or the creek or the lake, you're going to eat. But now we teach you how to fish, and what? Every day you know how to use your equipment, and thus in the telescope way, you become an observer that can pass the knowledge and torture knowledge on. Sounds cool.
And what knowledge are you going to be passing on tonight out at Lost Dutchman State Park?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. It's the last of the series for 2016, obviously, December 7 p.m., folks. All the money goes to the park. It's a $7 contribution to the Lost Dutchman State Park. 7 p.m., we're going to show the supermoon, or the pre-supermoon, I should say, and the telescopes, have a conversation about what's coming up in 2017. And I've got some really cool things to mention to those that attend, and right here, live on Rosie on the House. We have still the best eclipse of all of your lifetime, folks. It's the Great American Solar Eclipse, a total solar eclipse, August the 21st of 2017. It's never too early, Roma, to talk about this because people have been planning this for years, and we're going to be talking about how you can take a look at this. My best suggestion, if you want to wrap it up, and I know we probably do, is probably the easiest and closest destination to us here in Arizona is probably Idaho Falls, Idaho, because it's easy, more direct, and you can get there.
Book
we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in the future. But you want to make preparation. Seriously, there's not a lot of hotels there. So if you're going to RV it like we probably will, that'll be cool. And then finally, if you want to join me, Dr. Sky, and all of our friends and fans and friends, we begin with the Ruby Princess, the beautiful Princess Cruise Line ocean liner. We're doing new cruises out on the ocean starting Thursday, April the 20th. And how you can get involved in that. It's a four-day cruise. We'll leave Los Angeles, visit Santa Barbara, go to Ensenada, and do Dr. Sky stuff on board. What better way to see the sky than out in the dark of the skies of the ocean?
Is that something new, Dr. Sky? Will that be your first ocean cruise?
It'll be the first ocean cruise. I mean, we certainly love the Dolly Steamboat, and we'll continue that. And, you know, that's obviously a great place. People love that. But the group is called Cruise Planners. They're here in Arizona. And give them a call. I'll give the number twice, 623-518-9458. That's 623-518-9458. Our first Dr. Sky cruise on the beautiful Ruby Princess on the Princess Cruise Lines. Thursday, April 20th. So we're moving out and expanding. And this is by popular demand because people have said, hey, let's go out and venture beyond lakes, which are still beautiful. Of course, we'll continue to do that. But it's a great opportunity. And like many out there, I love ocean cruises and looking forward to inviting our friends there to do that in 2017.
And I would imagine those cruise ships get far enough offshore that you don't get any coastal glow.
No, I've been on a few. I was one on a Royal Caribbean cruise. You're exactly right, Romy, out in the ocean. Sometimes the lighting can be difficult, let's be honest. I mean, if you're on the upper deck, there's other things going on. But toward the back end of this large cruise ship there, you know, about a 1,000-foot cruise ship, I had some of the best views of the southern sky because, obviously, if the weather's good, you're right. You can see dark skies right literally to the horizon. So we were watching the Southern Cross rise over the ocean. And everybody who's cruised, they know that, how beautiful it can be. But the only problem is I weighed about 15 pounds more after the cruise than when I got on. But that was fun, too. You know, that was a good thing. So many things to do and talk about. And, you know, as we wrap up this year, it's kind of interesting. Monday night, take a look for the occultation. Start looking after 7 p.m. If you're patient, watch the moon cover the star. It's a rare sight. And obviously the supermoon. And then don't forget this, the Geminid meteor shower. It peaks, sadly, on the night of the supermoon. So the moon's light wipes out a lot of meteors. But where are they coming from? On the night of the 13th, look to the northeast. And all during the night, even though the moon is out there, you may get to see a few bright fireballs. This is one of the only meteor showers that astronomers know that did not simply come from a comet. This one is probably part/comet asteroid, which is unusual. But guess what? They give us some of the most phenomenal fireballs. Obviously, the moon's light will interfere and lower the number. So if you see a few, Dr. Sky's opinion is look early, just after the moon rises, after sunset, because they call these Earth grazers. They're big fireballs that literally shoot across the sky. They're grazing the Earth, and they're probably the size of, you know, maybe the size of seeds, you know, like watermelon seeds, up to maybe the size of small rocks and pebbles.
Wow. Something that small creates that big of a
It's amazing, guys. Yeah.
So how fast does it have to be going to create that?
Well, it depends on who you ask, and you're asking me. The velocity of these objects coming in are upwards of 60,000 miles an hour easily. That's on the slower end. And some showers produce meteors with velocities of about 130 to 140,000 miles an hour. And think of this, with the International Space Station up in the, you know, low Earth orbit, 260 miles or so as you go straight up from the Earth. The problem with that is these objects are still traveling so fast, so anything that's in its way, it's like super hypersonic velocity bullets flying through space. And, of course, what we see on the ground is the beautiful sight of seeing the thing disintegrate. Those meteor shower meteors or fireballs, they usually never hit the ground. But the other stray asteroids like we've had back in June, you know, you remember that, when we had this object maybe the size of, I don't know, 20 or 30 feet or more come through the atmosphere. And good friends of mine and probably people you've had here on the show that I've been listening every week, they go out and what do? They harvest them and find them. And I find that group, that's the most amazing thing. How do you find particles from space that are strewn over such a wide area? So those folks are really amazing to me to be able to find them. But those are the ones that strike the ground when they're that size.